Spirit Catholic Radio, KVSS. We are Catholic Radio for the Christian community. Good morning. Welcome to Spirit Mornings with Bruce McGregor and
Chris McGregor.
And Chris, I dare to say we use the word delight a lot, but it is always delightful to have with us our next guest. Speaking of Bob Lockwood, the former president and publisher of our Sunday Visitor, now the head of communications for the Diocese of Pittsburgh and a frequent contributor to the Our Sunday Visitor Weekly. Also the author of A Faith for Grown-Ups and is heard quite often on our very own Catholic Answers here at Spirit Catholic Radio. Bob, good morning. Welcome to the program. Always a pleasure.
Oh, I just love being with you. Great way to start.
Well, you have become quite the hit here on the radio station because our interview, when I was so blessed to visit your beautiful offices down in Pittsburgh, we got such a great response. People were racing out to pick up A Faith for Grown-Ups.
Oh, wonderful.
But they also wanted to hear more from you because I think you have just a way of touching people's hearts.
Oh, well, that's nice. They collected money to buy me new carpet.
I was just going to ask about the carpet. That was the other thing. Do they have any pictures anywhere so we can see the carpet?
Boy, somehow we should download that somewhere, shouldn't we?
Yeah, really. I thought it was very utilitarian in its
nature. If by utilitarian you mean you never have to worry about spilling anything.
Yeah.
You
know? We were talking just before we got started how I had the opportunity to take a look at your recent article in Our Sunday Visitor. It's actually entitled Christmas Time is Here, and you talk about the Peanuts classic, their Christmas special, which I just happened to remember seeing for the very first time when I was a little kid. And you were reflecting on Charles Schulz, and I have to tell everybody, I did. I got all weepy towards it halfway through your article, Bob.
Well, it's such a sad story, but of course, you know, all artists, to a certain extent, they leave behind so many wonderful things, and in that sense, what they give to us is marvelous. But his personal story seemed so sad to me. I had been watching it on American Masters. It's a PBS show. And they were doing a portrait of Charles Schulz, who, of course, had created Peanuts. And one part, right toward the end, they were running bits of an interview that he had done on the Today Show, which actually was just a short time, it may have been a day or two, before he died of cancer, which was in itself one of those incredible moments that happened, that he would actually end up dying of cancer the day before his last comic strip appeared. And Roker was asking him, you know, one of the famous of many running gags in the Peanuts comic strip was Lucy's going to hold the football so Charlie Brown can kick it. And he runs up, and at the last second she pulls the ball away, and he sails up in the air and lands flat on his back. And at one time, earlier on, Schulz had said that he would never let Charlie Brown kick the ball. His quote was, "That would be a terrible disservice to him after nearly half a century." I don't quite know how, but that's what he explained it. But as he was dying, he told Al Roker something different. What he said was, and it was such a touching thing, he was kind of shaking his head, looking down, and just said, "Why didn't I ever let that little kid kick the ball?" And then he just, as if he couldn't understand this at all, and then he kind of looked down and looked away from the camera, and I'm not sure, you know, obviously what may have gone on after that, but I think it was one of the saddest moments that I ever saw in a TV interview.
I had seen that same American Masters presentation on the life of Charles Schulz, and it was so poignant. I think that gift of that Christmas special, that the Peanuts, when you look at his life, and he seemed to be such a sad man, even towards the end, isn't it remarkable how out of that sadness and on his own inwardness, something so beautiful would come out and be able to continue to speak to the American culture for over 40 years?
Well, I think, you know, we've seen that over and over again. I know that, You know, now this is very secular there, but it had some very funny moments. The Gene Shepherd Christmas Story, I think
sure.
it's called. You know, and it's, that's the one that they run on the one TV station 24 hours on Christmas Day.
Yep.
Well, Gene Shepherd, I confess I was a tremendous fan of Gene Shepherd
mm-hmm.
when I was a kid. I loved his stories. I loved his stuff. And when he died a few years back, and the obit was in the New York Times, I must say, he was not a very pleasant man.
Mm.
No relationship with his kids, which oddly enough, he spent all his time, you know, writing about being a kid and, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. Well, he ended up having no relationship with his kids. It was a very sad, sad story of a very depressing guy. And yet, you always go back to the fact that the art that people can create, the joy that they can give people, sometimes it doesn't depend on whether they're a nice person.
Mm-hmm.
That what they give us is, I mean, man, this is God's work. This is the Holy Spirit's work. I you know, the idea of what makes the creative person creative and how they are often guided by the Holy Spirit, even if they're an unbeliever,
mm-hmm.
even if they're a rat, the Holy Spirit can still guide you with the skills that God gave you, with the creativity that God gave you, to put together an absolutely wonderful thing, sometime contrary to your entire purpose.
Mm.
But the Peanuts special, of course, the Charlie Brown's Christmas that we've all been watching, and I love that little nugget of information that the show was first broadcast on December 9th, 1965, preempting a broadcast of the Munsters.
Oh, dear.
How's that for a little baby boomer story?
Yeah. Oh, whatever happened to the Munsters? Well, that's a whole other story.
You could see it on late-night television all the time now. But a Charlie Brown's Christmas, it was a fascinating thing because anybody who's seen it realizes that the major, you know, Charlie Brown is concerned about the materialism of Christmas and what is Christmas all about, what does it mean, and there's very wonderful, wonderful points in it. And then the Peanuts gang gets the answer to that question, what is the meaning of Christmas, when Linus recites the old King James nativity narrative from Luke, and the show ends with all the kids kind of joined together for a chorus of Hark the Herald Angels Sing. I always loved one of the reviewers at the time said that Linus's reading of the nativity narrative was the dramatic highlight of the season. I mean, it so impacted and affected people. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing was that you found from the American Masters series that generally the producers of the show wanted to take it out.
Mm-hmm.
They thought it was a drag. They thought it was kind of a downer to what had been a very funny little cartoon show. And Schultz, who at that time was a minister, said, he was a religious education, Sunday school teacher, and he said, now you take that out, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. So he absolutely insisted on it remaining. And for one, I believe that that's why a Charlie Brown Christmas is not just, you know, one of many little silly things that pop up every once in a while, but it's become an absolute Christmas institution because it does really get people where they live.
Yeah, it is such an important message. I think there's that moment when Linus, when the spotlight comes onto him and he recites that and that quietness of it all and just lays it all out. It just, every single time I see it.
Yeah. Right, and then he says, that's what it's all about. That's what Christmas is all about, Charlie Brown. And it's so beautiful because they use those children's voices, not adults, pretending children's voices.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me that even year after year, it still continues to air in network television, though I doubt you would ever have anything contemporary made with that message today.
No, it's politically incorrect. You know, we're not allowed to say Christmas anymore.
Yeah.
You know, we have to say icicle season or sparkle season or, you know, something like that. I mentioned in my column, rumor has it that the word Christmas has been banned in Oregon for years. You know, there's this whole idea that, you know, and what's so funny is everybody complains about the materialism of the season, but what they want to ban from the season, and some note of political correctness, is any mention of what the whole purpose is.
Right.
Right.
You know, and it's so crazy, really. I mean, somebody as sick as me finds it funny, you know, that you see all of them struggling around the word Christmas and around any recognition of what the holiday is all about. What every thing in our culture is talking about and doing for 25 days during Advent and leading up to Christmas, but we can never mention the word. That is the great word that shall go unspoken, you know.
Yeah.
And as I said, it's kind of this nutty existence where everybody really knows what it's about, but nobody feels they can say what it's about.
Right.
And this is why our culture goes Looney Tunes on a regular basis.
What I find really ironic too, Bob, is that here you have this Christmas special, this peanut special. When I was a kid, of course, it was always on CBS, and it was always sponsored by Dolly Madison and the cupcakes and all these other things. But today it is now broadcast on ABC, which is, of course, owned by the Disney Corporation.
Yes.
And they are doing, ironically, just about everything they can to avoid that whole Christmas moniker.
Sure. Isn't that interesting? Because, you know, Disney is one of the strangest corporate identity in the world. It has almost this conscious effort to never mention anything Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is, you know, far. It's often been described as the corporation that created American civic religion, meaning, I'm not referring to patriotism here, I'm referring to this kind of mushy, vaguely sort of theistic public religion that exists in the United States. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that Disney, from its you know, you can go back to Steamboat Willie, it has never consciously put in anything that reflected a true Christian concept. Oh, of course, you know, I mean, certainly shared values that we all would have. Let's not cheat, let's be honest, let's be, you know, brave, clean, and reverent type of thing, but not reverent. But it helped to create, I mean, Disneyland is this, and Walt Disney World are these strangely de-Christianized places, but they have this kind of vague overtone of our American shared values. And Disney's always been like that. And what's really interesting with Disney now is that, you know, they do all these traveling shows, you know, everything from Hannah Montana. I get lost in all this stuff now, frankly. But they do all this kind of stuff. But they'll make very clear to you, if you want to make an arrangement to have one of the Disney sponsored things in your area, that it cannot have any Christian context to it, cannot have any faith context to it. This has to all be very, you know, from this secular kind of American civic religion perspective. And I really don't know why they are that way. Disney, Walt Disney himself, Walt was kind of brought up in a his father was kind of a kind of a fundamentalist, self-described preacher. And Walt himself was, well, he was kind of that vaguely Protestant American, but he didn't go to church himself, but he made sure his kids went to church, his two daughters, and he sent his daughters even to Catholic school, mm-hmm. although I think that was for the quality of the education rather than, you know, and certainly the girls never grew up to be practicing Catholics or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, it probably started in Disney with the idea that, well, we don't want to offend any faith group. You know,
right.
Back in the 30s, 40s, 50s, I don't want to offend Catholics, I don't want to offend Protestants, I don't want to offend Jews, so I'm going to just make sure that nothing really has any kind of faith perspective. But this has become a real mantra for Disney now, and it's fascinating and frankly a little spooky.
Yeah.
The thing that's always struck me, Bob, I think as a parent, when I remember when Bruce and I were very excited when we had little kids and we went to another Disney movie, which at that time were very, it was the same plot and it was very boring.
Yeah.
And we sat in the theater and all of a sudden we saw the opening of a new movie that just kind of took our breath away and said, oh, this is something different. And it was The Little Mermaid. It was so visually stunning, and the music was so wonderful. The thing that, you know, kind of niggled me a little bit in the back of the mind is that they took a story that taught a very important lesson about what happens when you sell your soul for something that you shouldn't, and they changed it and made it a happy ending, like somehow it was good. And then all the films after that, even Pocahontas, they took Pocahontas and twisted that.
Yeah, and, well, some of them, and they did The Hunchback of Notre Dame,
yep.
Right.
And made that. Now, I've been blessed by the fact that my kids are both 30 years old now. So I missed a lot of these ones that you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go back, they were always beautiful entertainment. You know, even
right.
Go back to the original Snow White, you do Cinderella, you do all these things. They were really great entertainment. And there was nothing... In the earlier stuff, there was certainly nothing that was subversive to Christian faith, I would argue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, I think what happened later is not any intent to be subversive, but more just this clawing political correctness that shows up in something like Pocahontas.
Right.
You know, just so saps the life out of culture. You know,
yeah.
And I think they've fallen prey to that now, and in recent years and it just makes it just so terribly dull. And that's why, although they're visually stunning, I don't think they are anywhere near as good as the stuff that they used to do. I mean, these are the guys that did Old Yeller. Although, you know, I never got to see Old Yeller when I was a kid.
Why is that?
I was not allowed to see it. At the movie theater in New York, they had showed a very bad movie prior to it. Baby Doll, I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Cardinal Spellman made all the kids in Catholic grammar school send these little cards to their various theaters saying that anyone who showed that movie wouldn't... that we would never go to the theater again. So I signed the card just like everybody else, sent it in. And then the very next week at the theater that I was doing, Old Yeller came on.
Mm-hmm.
So I faced that great moral decision and I didn't go see Old Yeller. I think I was the only kid in my generation who never saw that movie. In fact, first time I saw the movie, I was in Italy and it was dubbed in Italian.
Oh, wow. You're right. I mean, there were some of the movies, you know, like Pollyanna and even Parent Trap that had kind of a more of a family message. But something's changed. Something in their vision has changed. And I don't know, when you're watching even on their Disney channel now and even the ABC channel and its influence on that, as we're moving towards the 25 days to Christmas, it's very curious, isn't it?
Yeah, you watch... such as I watch it now, so I don't consider myself any great expert on it. But there's no there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to just on the Disney Channel, there just seems to be this pervasive. You know, I think a little bit, to be honest with you, I think almost a little bit of the Holy Father's encyclical that he just released,
mm-hmm.
and where he's talking about hope, and where if you're living a life without God, it's hard to be very hopeful. So you get caught up in the kind of the mania of the moment. And that's what I think the Disney Channel is now. It's kind of the mania of the moment. They just do their historical run through, you know, whether it's, what is it, High School Musical or something like mm-hmm. that.
Right.
All this stuff which is not, there's nothing in it that's, you know, terribly awful. It's just, it's goofy. No pun intended. you know, there's just no there. You know, when you were young, when I was young, and you watched something like Pinocchio, for example, it was very touching.
Mm-hmm.
It made you think at the same time. I don't think there's anything in what they do now that makes anybody think. And, you know, if you can't even make an 8-year-old think, you know, because the material isn't challenging enough, you just wonder what you're doing it for other than the almighty dollar, and surely it's successful financially.
Wasn't it C.S. Lewis that said what makes a good children's literature? He said if it bores adults, then it shouldn't be done for kids.
Yes, and that's actually an extremely good point, because the, you know, I defy any adult to sit through the Disney Channel now.
Yeah.
But when I was, you know, I always, when I was, this is why my kids always roll their eyes at me. But when I was young, the whole family could watch. Family viewing didn't mean boring and childish,
right.
Okay? All it meant was that the whole family, this is appropriate for the whole family to watch. And the whole family could get something out of it. And something meaningful, and be entertained. And now, you know, what we call family viewing, it generally just bores the tears out of an adult because there's nothing there. There's no there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just semi-high school kids dancing around singing odd songs,
yeah.
You know, that every once in a while they're the type of songs that, oh, Lord, don't hear it first thing in the morning, or they'll stick in your head all night. You know, you make yourself miserable.
Yeah.
Quick, get a Beatles album.
Yes.
We have an emergency.
Yes, give me help, please.
Or a soundtrack to an Annette Funicello Frank Avalon movie.
Well, there you go.
Well, Bob, I think it's interesting, and as Chris pointed out, we lived down in Florida for 5 years in Orlando, so we had probably, being in the media there, a great firsthand experience with the Disney Corporation, if you will, the theme parks and all of the other things that went along. It almost seems to me, in looking back on that time and where we're at now, that this conglomeration is like almost the ultimate secularist kind of thing, that it just wants to be so politically correct in every camp and everywhere else that it ends up not pleasing everybody and almost falls in on itself a little bit.
Well, I think it's actually created something. It has created a culture that is, to a certain extent, all-pervasive in the United States. And that this culture, unfortunately, this culture can then be spun off into a lot of terrible areas.
Right.
Because essentially, it's a non-judgmental culture where everything is sweet and nice, you know, and the one thing that we want to do is a varnish over with some trickly molasses any differences that we have, any true differences that we have, that's not a vibrant culture. That's not the sign of a vibrant culture. You know, frankly, cultures where everybody thinks the same, we call them frightening dictatorships.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? And they've created this culture of mushiness. Now, obviously, I just don't think it started there. I think Walt Disney was trying to almost recapture an idealized childhood, mm-hmm. you know, of the small American town, the vanishing American town. So to a certain extent, he created, you do see this a lot of in the old Yellers and things like this, this, you know, American frontier and this idea back when everything was good, you know, as the kind of defining thing. But somehow that morphed into this kind of non-offensive mushiness that says nothing. I guess that's what bothers me more than anything else, is that it says nothing. Mm-hmm. I would defy you to be challenged by any Disney material.
Well, and the one thing, when you mention Old Yeller, or you even mentioned Pollyanna, which was a big favorite of mine when I was a young girl growing up, and they were based on good children's literature.
Yes.
And we do have some good children literature out there, but it's not being reproduced. Instead, they're going to writers who are creating series so that they can sell items. Old Yeller wasn't produced so it could sell labs, you know, I mean, our
right.
Old Yeller action figures.
Old Yeller
action figures. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't designed back then. And even Pollyanna, all those characters, it wasn't like there was a doll. That I mean, the right. original book wasn't done like that. Or it didn't have an agenda, say, like for a Philip Pullman novel.
Right. Yeah, I mean, now we have the Golden Compass. You know, now that has nothing to do with Disney, mm-hmm. Of course. But I don't know, except for, you know, lovely killer polar bears, what stuffed animals are going to come out of the Golden Compass.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, it's, or maybe there'll be a little wind-up doll that you pull the string and it says something anti-Catholic, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe that's what'll come out of that. But yeah, I mean, everything's marketing, everything's bucks. I remember Disney was just amazed, you know, at the Davy Crockett thing, you know, with the coonskin caps.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first time that anybody really clearly had the concept that, oh boy, we could make money off this stuff. You know, lots of money, more than we can make off the movie. I mean, I have no way of knowing, but I would be almost certain that, you know, decades worth of Star Wars stuff probably has made infinitely more money for people than the movies ever did.
Yeah. Mm.
You know, and so that starts entering into your head, so you start creating things, you know, that can justify the selling of stuff. Now, again, you know, I'm a good American. I understand we got to sell stuff. You know, that's part of what happens. But it's this compromising of art and not dealing creativity, encouraging creativity. You know, I wonder sometimes how much creativity we really even encourage now in our schools. We all want the kids to be, you know, techno-aware, techno-driven, techno-everything else. And because art for art's sake doesn't make a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
you know? And the artist doesn't make a lot of money unless he's very lucky, you know? But again, going back to where we started, you know, Charles Schulz made all his money. You know, he didn't make his money off the strip. He made his money off, you know, selling the rights so we'd have everything. Because you remember that era we went through. It wasn't just Snoopy lunchboxes.
Mm-hmm.
It was Snoopy peanut butter, you know,
yep.
Snoopy combs, you know, Snoopy lobsters. I don't know. Snoopy everything, you know.
Right.
And that's where he made his money.
Well, I remember seeing a picture of a young Bruce McGregor with a coonskin cap on his on his head.
Had it.
I certainly had a coonskin cap.
Yeah, me too.
I did. But you see how I excuse myself is I didn't have any money in those days, so somebody had to have bought it for me. So they're the culprit, not me.
think this kind of brings us back to the beginning of our conversation. I mean, that whole scene where it was felt that everybody had to stop and Linus had to tell us again the reason why we're here.
Right.
Even 40 years ago. I mean,
maybe we need that now just as much. Just stop and just think why we're here. What the purpose, not just at Christmas time, but 365 days out of the year. The Holy Father makes the a wonderful point about how we have to, what we forget is we constantly keep talking about the progress of mankind and humanity's progress and everything like that and how we can look back, you know, six centuries ago and see this inevitable progress. Well, the only real progress we're seeing is somewhat of a progress in technology, although, as one wag put it, you know, you can also cite progress from going from the slingshot to the atom bomb if you want to,
yeah.
And that gives you a different idea of progress. But the Holy Father's concept is humanity, people, we have to, in essence, recreate that humanity with each generation. It's not something that's instinctual.
Mm-hmm.
It's that we have to create believers out of each generation. We have to create people who honor decency each generation. This is not something that happens when we are born. It's something that we learn. So human progress, yes, but human progress is only found in the type of people we are and how we treat each other, the decent way that we live our lives, and how we live for God and in God in our lives. That's progress, and that has to be redone each generation. So, you know, what Linus said 40 years ago on a Charlie Brown Peanuts moved people 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 1,500 years ago, 1,600 years ago. And we will need that same message 1,600 years from now. So it's so critical that we pass it along.
Oh, beautifully said.
Bob Lockwood, everyone.
I'm crying again.
Yeah. Bob, always a pleasure to speak with you. We deeply appreciate it. Sadly, we've just run out of time. Any final thoughts before we wrap up this morning?
Well, I think I just blew my whole cover on the last one. We'll stay there. God bless everyone.
God bless you, Bob Lockwood, and your family as well.
Thank you.